Hello, everyone. This is the fifth Epical Revelation Fellowship. I'm Dr. Roger Paul. And tonight is Wednesday, the 15th of July, 2015, and we're going to study paper 46, the local system headquarters. And that begins in your answer book on page 519.1 or paper 4601. So let's say a little prayer and we'll get started. I think I'll start out tonight with a prayer. Father, thank you for this opportunity to come and share this wonderful revelation once again tonight. We pray that you'll bless these people that come to listen to this video and bless us tonight and keep us on track. Open our hearts and our minds that we might absorb some of this difficult material, be able to relate it to others that they might have the benefit of this wonderful news, your ascension plan. We thank you and we give you the praise in your son Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen.
All right, Millie, you're on my screen tonight first, so you want to start out for us? Let me get the... Oops.
Yes, let's get started. I listened to this today on my DVD, and I would be surprised if we make it through the whole paper. It scrambled my head in places. The local system headquarters. Jerusalem, the headquarters of Satania, is an average capital of a local system, and aside from numerous irregularities occasioned by the Lucifer Rebellion and the bestowal of Michael on Urantia, it is a typical of similar sphere. It's typical of similar spheres. Your local system has passed through some stormy experiences, but it is at present being administered most efficiently, and as the ages pass, the results of disharmony are being slowly but surely eradicated. Order and goodwill are being restored, and the conditions on Jerusalem are more and more approaching the heavenly status of your traditions. For the system headquarters is truly the heaven visualized by the majority of 20th century religious believers.
Okay, and the heaven they're talking about there is our concept of what we have read about in the book of Revelation. You know, golden streets, pearly gates, that sort of thing, right? And it's interesting.
What I stumbled on in this paper was I had not realized that the headquarters of the system was not on. I didn't realize that they were all separate spheres to themselves.
That's right.
They're not on the big sphere of the,
Salvington.
I got very confused. I got very, very confused in reading this.
It's hard to keep in our concepts that Jerusalem is our system headquarters, right? That's what went into rebellion was the system sovereign, right? And Adentia is the constellation headquarters, okay? And Salvington is the local universe headquarters. And
it's Adentia is not on a planet called Malaysia Deck. It's a planet of its own origin, its architectural sphere. It's Jerusalem and Salvington.
That's right. Norlaisha Deck is our local constellation, right? And Nebadon is our local universe. That makes sense? So it's hard to keep them separate when you first start trying to remember all these different things. That Jerusalem is in Satania, which is our local system. Adentia is in Norlaisha Deck, which is our constellation. And Nebadon is the name of our local universe, and that capital of that is Salvington. All right, and Salvington is where Jesus or Michael dwells, right? So that's the breakdown of the universes and stuff. And so what they're saying here is our local system has had some struggles because of the Lucifer Rebellion. He was our system sovereign. And then it even changed things more because Michael decided to do his last and final bestowal as sovereign of his local universe on Urantia, on our planet. And we are part of the system of Satania that was in rebellion. And we're still in quarantine for that. But what they're saying here is We've passed through most of the stormy experiences. In other words, the results of the Lucifer Rebellion are being slowly eradicated as more and more of the beings of the Lucifer Rebellion are adjudged. And when they're finally all adjudged, those who have caused this disharmony will be removed from the universe. They will cease to exist. And everything will eventually be restored to as it should be. Okay? So that's a lot. We've been through a lot. Okay. Let's first go. I've got some repeats on some slides here because I want you all to understand what we're talking about as we go through it. So tonight we're going to talk about Jerusalem, right? This big sphere here. That's the center. That's our system capital. And we studied this before, but around the system capital are seven spheres. One of them is, number one, the finaliter sphere. And the seven mansion worlds that we go to first surround that first finaliter world. Okay? So that's where we are. That's what we're talking about. Now I'm going to advance here a little bit. And this is a little bit of review here. So this is the finaliter world, and this is the seven mansion worlds that surround it. And you see up here is Jerusalem, right? And that's what we're going to discuss tonight, Jerusalem. Okay. Also, Jerusalem is part of the constellation of Nerlashadech. And our capital of our constellation is Aventia, which we studied last week, right? All right, so that's where we are in things. So the mansion worlds are part of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is part of Aventia. And Aventia is part is the capital of constellation Nerlashadech, which is part of our local universe of Salvington, which is part of U Minor the Third. It's up there in the corner. That's our minor sector. And our major sector is U Major the Fifth. Okay. And this is a repeat, like I said. And this is our system government of our local universe. Okay? Or not our local universe, of our system. Okay? And this is all the people, the beings that replace the cabinet of Lucifer. Right? Lanaforge, Mansarota, Sabid, Holden, Bilton, Fortin, and Hanabard. Okay, so that's the cabinet of our local system. Okay, well, let's go on to the first.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
How many evolutionary worlds did Jesus have to choose from for his final descent?
For his final descent, Gabriel and his basically people that he assigned to this project picked three planets. Okay?
But what I mean is, how many planets were there at that time?
Oh, 619. There was 619 possible planets he could have done his bestowal in our local system.
Okay? Yeah, couldn't either.
He could have chosen any in any part of Nerlashadech. So that would have been up to 10,000 planets, Rodney.
In Nerlashadech. Okay,
yeah.
I thought that he could have chose any sphere in Lebanon.
Yeah, that's what I said, wasn't it?
Nerlashadech.
Yeah. Yeah, any sphere in Lebanon that was inhabited, he could have chose. Right?
So that's like
The current number that's right. Out of 10 million planets, he could have chosen any inhabited planet, and that's around 3.5 million inhabited ones.
So he chose Urantia.
But he chose Urantia. Now keep in mind, we're a really young local universe, right? Because we're only one-third populated on our planets. So we have two-thirds of the planets that have not been populated as of yet.
Did you say that backwards?
No.
Well, I got 600. Doesn't that mean we're two-thirds populated? We got one.
I may have that backwards, Millie. You may be right. You may be right.
We got 600. We got 300 more to go.
That's right. 300,000. Right? No.
So, hey, Roger.
3 million. Right? 3 million to go. I mean, I is that
3 million
right?
And fall.
I have to look that one up, Millie, but I think you're right. I think it's 3 million to go. So we're two-thirds populated. There we go. Right? Y'all correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know. I'm lost again.
Okay.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
Out of the 619 worlds, we're the 606, correct?
606. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So there were another, you know, what, 13 worlds populated after us.
Yeah, there's should be about 1,000 worlds total in Satania.
Yeah, Satania should.
So it's over two-thirds.
Yeah.
Or about two-thirds, 100.
Yeah, that's just Satania though, Rodney. I was talking about Nevadon. I think
Nevadon.
Yeah.
10 billion.
10 million. Yeah. Right.
Now, like I say, I've got a note here. Eventually, 10 million worlds, but there's 10 million, but
yeah.
At the time, presently, there's only 3,840,000 101 worlds.
That's what I thought, yeah. So I was correct in my first statement. It were only one-third populated in Nevadon.
Yeah,
right?
One-third in Nevadon.
Yeah. Everybody with me? Did I lose everybody again? Some of those things you have to look up. I could look it up. It's right behind me. But I just pulled
the 619 are in our system?
That's right, Millie. Okay. The 619 are in our system of Satania.
Did you read about this in paper 15, Roger?
Yes, you sure can. In paper 15, it breaks it all down. Sure does. Okay, if anybody wants to look it up. Also on our chart, the master history of the master universe and that sort of thing, it's on that too. So,
there's paper 12, 15, and then if you want to read about the sacred spheres, that's 13,
yeah,
etc.
Right, we've gone over that. Hard to remember all of it. Right. Okay. Well, let's keep going. Who's next? Tim, would you take the next one?
One, physical aspects of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is divided into 1,000, I can't pronounce that word, Roger.
Latitudinal
sectors and 10,000 longitudinal zones.
Right.
The sphere has 7 major capitals and 70 major administrative centers.
Minor.
The 7 minor administrative centers.
Right.
The 7 sectional capitals are concerned with diverse activities and the system sovereign is present in each at least once a year.
Okay, so I have a picture of this that makes it a little clearer. Okay? These are the capitals of the sections. Okay, so each one of these capitals of the sections, the system sovereign is in at least once a year. Okay?
Once a standard year?
Yeah, once a system year. Yeah, standard.
System.
Yeah. All right. Got lots of pictures tonight, so you try to keep us straight on some of this stuff. Okay, Rodney, would you take the next one, please, sir?
Sure, Roger. The standard mile on Jerusalem is equivalent to about 7 Urantia miles. The standard weight, the granite, is built up through the decimal system from the mature ultimaton, and presents almost exactly 10 ounces of your weight represents from it. The Satania day equals 3 days of your Urantia time, less 1 hour, 4 minutes, and 15 seconds. That being the time of the axial revolution of Jerusalem. The system year consists of 100 Jerusalem days. The time of the system This broadcast by the master Chronodex.
Chronodex, yeah. Remember, the Chronodex are the ones that have to do with time under the master physical controllers, right? Okay, let's go back.
Let me ask a question.
Sure.
This being the time of the Axial Revolution of Jerusalem, we turn facing the sun and away from the sun, facing the sun and away from the sun, to give us day and night.
Right.
And then while we're doing that, we're also rotating around our...
sun.
Yes.
Yes.
In our circuit. That gives us the seasons.
That gives us a year, too, right?
But the Earth gives us...
Why do they have to... Jerusalem is a architectural sphere. Why does it have to rotate and it by itself and then rotate also for the season?
It does not have seasons, though, Millie. It only has days, and it rotates for gravity. Okay? So
There are no days. There are no days. There are no seasons. So
no,
why does it rotate?
No, it rotates for gravity, and that axial rotation represents to them one day. Okay? And that one day is a little bit less than 3 days of our time. It's just a way for the Chronodex to keep track of days and years and things like that. It's interesting because the year of Satania is 100 days. It's not 365 days like we have. Okay? In other words, once the planet rotates 100 times for 100 days, no, that's not correct either. Once it rotates enough up 100 years, that's what they consider a year. But remember, their years is 100 days. Follow me?
100 of their days.
100 of their days, that's right.
It would be 300 of ours.
That's right. Yeah. So 100 of their days, in other words, their years about 300 and about three times ours, right? No, it's pretty close to ours.
Sure.
Yeah.
Their year would be less than ours.
Yes, it would be that's hard to say exactly. By about 65 days, right, Rodney? Of our days. So
I don't know. I would have to figure it out.
Yeah, you'd need a calculator to figure it out, which you can do. The other thing I wanted to mention about this is the fact that, remember reading in previous papers how many things in the local universe, including the ultimaton and that sort of stuff, is in a decimal system. What's a decimal system? 10, right? So 10 ounces of our weight makes up what they call a standard weight of which is called gradient for them. And it's built from the decimal system. So the reason I brought this up is this. Where do you think we got ours from? Probably Adam and Eve. Does that make sense?
It makes very much sense.
Because Adam and Eve would be used to this sort of decimal system, so wouldn't that be what they would teach the barbarians?
Maybe it went back to Dalmatia.
May have went back to Dalmatia. Right.
That was the teaching school. So.
That's right. May very well have been either Dalmatia or Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, either one, right? Because
mm-hmm.
That was the basic stuff they were teaching. Remember, they taught 26 characters to start out with as an alphabet. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we have on this planet that probably came from either the 100 Dalmatians that came or Adam and Eve, one of the two, right? It's kind of interesting. Funny how it all works together. I guess I'm up. The energy of Jerusalem is superbly controlled and circulates about the sphere in the zone channels, which are directly fed from the energy charges of space and expertly administered by the master physical controllers. We've heard of those before, right? The natural resistance to the passage of these energies through physical channels of conduction yields the heat required for the production of the equitable temperature of Jerusalem. The full light temperature is maintained at about 7 degrees Fahrenheit, while during the period of light recession, it falls to a little lower than 50 degrees. Now, why would this be? First of all, they're bringing in energy from out in space along the father circuits, right? The father circuit, the circuit of Havona, the sun circuit, and the spirit circuit, right? They take the energy from the physical part, which would be the circuit for the Garden of Paradise, right? And that's administered and controlled by the master physical controllers. Now, the master physical controllers, we just read about the chronodex, they're under their purview too, right? And during the day hours, there is no sun on Jerusalem, right? So it's lighted and heated from these energy channels, okay? And they talk about this in a couple slides, but they talk about how the atmosphere of Jerusalem lights up much along the degree of the northern lights. We see the northern lights in Alaska and places like that. Well, that's about how it works. It's not exactly, but it's a good
illustration.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, and they're talking about during the full light temperature of the daytime, what they consider the daytime, it's 70 degrees. And then they have a light recession period of about, I think it's one quarter of a day. And that's when everybody rests and recharges. And then the temperature falls to about 50 degrees and the light is dimmed till about the light of a normal full moon on this planet. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Hey, Roger, I had a question.
Sure.
It says, can you give me a description of the word energy? And when you do, what exactly are we dealing with?
We're talking about, in this case, Tim, we're talking about physical energy along the energy circuits of paradise. Paradise controls all matter, okay? The Isle of Paradise and Havona both control all matter. So the energy they're talking about here is a physical energy.
So that would be the material, not the mind or the spiritual, correct?
No, yeah, it would be the material, not the mind, not the spiritual, and not the Father's personality circuit.
But did they give you a description of what the energy looks like?
No, they don't. All they say is that it is controlled by paradise. All physical matter is controlled by paradise, and this would be considered a physical energy, okay? So this would be a paradisical energy is what they're talking about. And that's what Jerusalem, Audientia, and Salvington are all heated and cooled by is this energy circuit. Okay?
So Roger?
Yeah.
You know, I always think of these physical energy lines as compared to microwave and on Earth.
Yeah.
Microwave towers and energy from tower to tower.
Yeah.
It's a form of energy. You do not want to be in the path of that.
Yeah, it's a physical energy, though, isn't it, Rodney?
Oh, yeah.
It's very physical. And we forget about that there's energies. We don't really see it, but it's still a physical energy, right?
I've got a couple of questions. What were you referring to the morning lights? What did that have to do with it?
The morning lights, that's a physical energy that they heat and cool with, and the morning light phenomena is much like the way they light the planet, because the planet itself has no sun, okay? It's not close to a sun enough to get much light. So the light coming from the planet is locally produced.
And I wonder how bright it is, probably.
It's not bright enough for you to see the planet out, even if you're close to it.
Well, I mean, while you're on the surface.
It is like being outside at 10 o'clock in the morning on a nice sunny day.
That's exactly right, Billy. It's like being outside.
We're going to get to it. I told you I read this stuff.
Yeah. It's like being outside at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's how much light. That's a pretty good bit of light, right? But the planet itself does not reflect the light. You understand the atmosphere does. Ooh, I lost everybody. Just like that. Well, let me see if I can get it back. Sorry at home, I lost everybody that was listening. So let me pause the videos and we'll start it back up. Okay, folks, we should be back on here. We had a slight technical glitch there. That happens. All right. I need this laptop. And this here. Okay. That one is off. Okay, y'all, refresh my meeting. The lighting system.
Yeah, I was wondering about the light. Millie had just said that the full daylight, during daylight, is like 10 a.m. in the morning here.
Right.
And so I'm curious. So obviously there's not going to be a heat source in the sky like the sun is
here. No, there's no heat and there's no ball of light in the sky like there normally is.
No ball of light.
Yeah, it comes from everywhere in the atmosphere. And
so
no,
I wonder if there's any shadow.
That I don't know. I hadn't thought about that, Rodney, to be honest. But the heat will seem to come from everywhere, so I wouldn't think that there would be, if there is shadows, it would be multiple from everywhere. You know?
And then number two, during the evening hours, when the light is dimmer, I believe it's sort of like the full moon here.
Yeah, it's like the full moon here. But keep in mind, the mechanical physical controllers reduce the light, and the light, when they reduce the light, it's all over the entire planet.
Exactly.
Right? It's not just one half, or, you know, like we get sun and darkness from one half at a time, you know, from the sun. But it's not like that. Since all the light comes from the atmosphere, the whole planet is lit up during the daylight hours. And when they have the recession hours, then the whole planet is darker, right? And the other thing is, since there's no reflective light off the planet from like a sun or anything like that, like our planet, you can't see it when you get far away from the planet. In other words, probably even the planets close to it, it would not be hardly visible, right?
Exactly.
And now, not only Jerusalem is this way, but all the satellites that surround it are this way also. Okay? So they get all their light and heat by the same method.
Okay. So, hey, Roger.
Yeah.
There's 2 degrees here. It talks about 70, and then it talks about 50. Is it 70 during the daytime, and then maybe 50 during the night?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tim. At night, they reduce the temperature to give it an appearance of as a nighttime, right? And they cool it off just like you would have in a
regular. So they control the lighting system.
So they control the lighting and the heat system both.
That's okay, thank right. you, Roger.
Yeah. And it's a perfect degrees all the time. And so there's no seasons whatsoever, are there? You know, the sun has to do with our seasons and our rotation, right? And how the earth rotates around the sun and the angle it's on. So there's no seasons whatsoever. It's the same all the time. That's what people call it would seem like heaven to some people, right?
For some people.
Yeah. That's right.
But I was going to ask, during the evening hours, I'm just wondering, it doesn't mention anything, but can you see the stars?
Probably so, Rodney, I would think.
And other, you know, other planets.
Yeah, I would think it would be, I think you could see the stars just like you do here, and probably see less of them during the daytime, just like here, right?
Well, Roger, the lighting system would be compared to like a dusk season. And our planet, right?
That's right, yeah.
So you can see some kind of stars shining through, right?
Yeah, yeah. But in the evening hours, you see more than you would in the daytime because it would be brighter, right? Okay, let's go to the next paragraph. Who read the last one? I don't remember before the...
Roger, you read it.
Okay.
It's Diane's time.
Is Diane out there? Do y'all see her?
kept seeing the cat off to the side. I assume Diane was with you.
No, she's at the other house, and I haven't seen her sign in yet. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I haven't seen her sign in.
Okay, then it's me.
Okay, yeah, it's you.
The lighting system of Jerusalem should not be so difficult for you to comprehend. There are no days and nights, no seasons of heat and cold. The power transformers maintain 100,000 centers from which rarefied energies are projected upward through the planetary atmosphere, undergoing certain changes until they reach the electric air ceiling of the sphere. And then these energies are reflected back down as a gentle sifting and even light of about the intensity of Urantia sunlight when the sun is shining overhead at 10 o'clock in the morning.
There we go. We just talked about that, right? Let's keep going. Roger, would you take the next one? And I'm going to go around as you're on my screen. Keep me on my screen. Rodney?
What's Tim's?
Well, he's going to come on the next go around.
Okay, no problem.
That way I can keep you all straight.
Okay,
fine. You rearranged on, when I got the computer back up, it rearranged everybody, so.
It shuffled.
Yeah.
Okay, under such conditions of lighting, the light rays do not seem to come from one place. They just sift out of the sky, emanating equally from all space directions. This light is very similar to natural sunlight, except that it contains very much less heat. Thus, it will be recognized that such headquarters worlds are not luminous in space. If Jerusalem were very near Urantia, it would not be visible.
So even if we were near to the planet, it still would not be visible. So our telescopes would not pick up what?
Yeah, they wouldn't pick it up at all.
That's right.
There'd be no shadows since the light is emanating equally.
Yeah, that's
emanating equally from all directions.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have a shadow, would you?
Yeah, I don't think there would be any shadow.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. Okay, Tim, would you take the next one, please?
The gases which reflect this light energy from the Jerusalem upper ionosphere, back to the ground, are very similar to those in the Urantia upper air belts, which are concerned with the, I can't pronounce that word.
Auroral phenomena.
Like the aurora borealis?
That's exactly right.
Auroral phenomenon of their so-called northern lights. Although these are produced by the different causes, on Urantia, it is the same gas shield which prevents the escape of the terrestrial broadcast waves reflecting them earthward when they strike this gas belt in their direct outward flight. In this way, the broadcasts are held near the surface as they journey through the air around your world.
So just like our radio waves bounce off the atmosphere, is what they're talking about here, these light waves are produced by this energy bouncing off the atmosphere around Jerusalem, okay? And that's how it keeps the light in, is this these gases in the atmosphere. All right. Millie, would you take the next one, please? Millie, out there?
Turn your mic on, Millie.
I'm just reading along. This lighting of the sphere is uniformly maintained for 75% of the Jerusalem day, and then there is a gradual recession until, at the time of minimum illumination, the light is about that of your full moon on a clear night. This is the quiet hour for all Jerusalem. Only the broadcast receiving stations are in operation during this period of rest and rehabilitation.
So they treat it just like a nighttime, don't they? It's a period of rest. All right. Rodney, would you take the next one, please, sir?
Yeah. Jerusalem receives faint light from several nearby suns, a sort of brilliant story, but it is not dependent on them. Worlds like Jerusalem are not subject to the vastitudes of sun disturbances, neither are they confronted with the problem of a cooling or dying sun.
Okay, so it gets faint light from nearby suns. But it says here a sort of brilliant starlight, so that it'd be like bright stars in the sky, right?
Well, not enough light. Fact that there were no roofs on these on the structures that we have when we go there.
So there's no rain.
Yeah, there's no roof, there's no rain or atmospheric disturbance.
How do they keep the light and the heat or cooling, you know, in?
With the atmosphere, Millie. The atmosphere itself actually keeps it in.
Okay.
Did you say there's no atmosphere?
Yeah, there is atmosphere. It's a three-gas atmosphere, and that helps keep the light in. It doesn't escape the atmosphere and the heat.
And the energies that the energy people provide stay under the atmosphere.
That's right. They stay under the atmosphere. The mechanical, physical controllers keeps it contained that way by these gases. All right.
This is a strange place.
Yeah. If not, it would be very cold there, wouldn't it? Because of the cold of space, right? So if it gets outside, if you went outside the atmosphere, it would be very cold, just like it is here in space. All right.
50 degrees is a bit chilly.
That's chilly, but to a Marantia body, it might feel just right.
Well, you might have Marantia blankets.
Yeah. I'm going to bring a quilt.
All right.
I get cold easily.
Did Rodney, did you just read, or did was that Miller?
Well, I did. And then I think about birds. Being there's no roof. For animals.
Well, they could have flying elephants too, Rodney. Think of that. Anyway. All right, let's keep going.
Oh, my gosh.
The seven transitional study worlds and their 49 satellites are heated and lighted, energized, and watered by the same Jerusalem technique. That's what we're talking about. So the 49 satellites that surround the seven major and all these smaller ones, the seven that surround them, all are lighted and heated by the same technique. Okay? Let's keep going. Tim, would you take the next one, please?
Two, physical features of Jerusalem. On Jerusalem, you will miss the rugged mountain ranges of Urantia and other evolved worlds, since there are neither earthquakes nor rainfalls, but you will enjoy the beauteous highlands and other unique variations of
topography
and landscape. Enormous areas of Jerusalem are preserved in a natural state in the grandeur of such districts. It's quite beyond the powers of human imagination.
Now, remember when we read about the celestial artisans? Part of their job is to beautify these landscape areas, right? And they work with the native Spernasia to do this. And we're going to talk about them a little bit later in this paper.
And actually, Roger, the landscape on Edentia is a purple, isn't it?
Some of it's purple, some of it's green, Tim. The purple parts of the landscape are edible by what? Marantia-type beings. It becomes pure energy, or not Marantia, material sons and daughters. It becomes pure energy to them. And the green parts are eaten by all the local animals and anything like that. They even talk about a transport bird in here, and I'm sure they eat that too. All right? Millie, would you take the next one?
Yes. Where am I? Okay. There are thousands upon thousands of small lakes, but no raging rivers nor expansive oceans. There is no rainfall, neither storms nor blizzards, nor any of the architectural worlds. But there is the daily precipitation and the condensation of moisture during the time of lowest temperature attending the light recession. The dew point is higher on a three-gas world than on a two-gas planet like Urantia. The physical plant life in the Marantia the Marantia world of living things, both require moisture, but this is largely supplied by the subsoil system of circulation, which extends all over the sphere, even up to the very tops of the highlands. The water system is not entirely subsurface, but there are many canals interconnecting the sparkling lakes on Jerusalem.
So most of the plants get their water from underground, right? Subsoil water system. But there is a higher dew point, so there's more natural moisture in the atmosphere that falls in the light recession periods, and that helps keep the growing things growing. That makes
sense. I'm intrigued by the canals that interconnect with lakes.
Yeah. But
talk about unique variations of topography.
Yeah.
Just to be able to walk around and see lakes that connected by canals.
And, and remember when we studied Audentia, they said all of Audentia could be circumnavigated through these lakes and canals, just like on Jerusalem.
Maybe I'll take a canoe with me, too.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to pack. It's definitely a canoe.
Sounds like a wonderful place, doesn't it?
It does.
Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yeah, it reminds me of Venice.
Yeah, really.
Well, the description of the way the plants get their water, it sort of reminds me of hydroponic.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Interesting. Okay, the atmosphere in Jerusalem is a three-gas mixture. This air is very similar to that of your rancher, with the addition of a gas adapted to the respiration of the Marantian Larger order of life. This third gas can in no way unfits the air for the respiration of animals or plants of the material orders.
Okay, so they have a third gas. You know, ours is a two-gas atmosphere, right? So they have a third gas, which makes it comfortable for Marantia beings to breed. So we know that when we get to the mansion world, we'll be of a Marantia order. So when we breathe, this third gas will help us stay alive.
It's too strange the way it's written. This third gas in no way unfits
the air. Yeah, in other words, Millie, the regular plants and animals may live off the two-gas mixture, right? And the third gas is there just for the Marantia order of life.
Okay.
So, but the third gas does not affect the animals or plants. It makes it unfit for them to breed.
It just for the Marantias.
That's right. That's right. Okay. The transportation system is allied with the circulatory streams of energy movement. These main energy currents being located at 10-mile intervals. By adjustment of physical mechanisms, the material beings of the planet can proceed at a pace varying from 2 to 500 miles per hour. Keep that in mind. The transport birds fly at about 100 miles an hour. The air mechanisms of the material suns travel around 500 miles per hour. Material and early Marantia beings must utilize these mechanical means of transport, but spirit personalities proceed by liaison with the superior forces and spirit sources of energy. Okay, picture this in your mind, okay? There's an energy system in the atmosphere or on top of the planet that allows movement of physical beings and mechanical mechanisms, okay? So they must be flying through the air or flying across the top of the material, something along that line. And these are for Marantia and the material sons and daughters, right? But there's also there, using these mechanisms, we can move up to about 500 miles an hour, but there's also there transport birds. How about that? That fly at about 100 miles an hour. Now remember, when Adam and Eve was on the planets, they used transport birds up to get around the Garden of Eden. Remember that? We studied that a long, long, long time ago. All right? And there's also a spirit circuit on top of all of this that allows the spirit personalities to mobilize them all over the planet also. But remember, the spirit personalities move along a spirit circuit that's different than the Marantia and material circuits. Is that interesting?
So the spirit sources of energy are different than Marantia.
They are completely different from your Marantia. And the other thing I wanted to point out is this. We will all move in an organized manner across this huge planet. People just don't fly milly, you know, just around on themselves, right, by themselves. I guess unless you're on a transport bird, which probably gives you a little bit more freedom. Right.
You know, Roger, I just want to let you know that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it shows Krishna on a bird, and the bird's name is Garuda. But it's amazing how it shows that picture, if you ever look it up, the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, it's kind of parallel to the Garden of Eden, isn't it, Tim?
Mm-hmm. And the other question is, when you say spirit sources, are you talking about the Creator Mother Spirit or the Infinite Spirit?
No.
Related to that circuit.
No, we're it's the Infinite Spirit that creates the circuit, but it's the local universe mother spirit that would be controlling it on the planet.
Okay, thank you, Roger.
Okay. But I find that real interesting that there's circuits for each type of being to travel on. Okay, so the only free-form types of flying sounds like the transport birds.
And when you say circuit too, you're not talking about presences, you're talking about actual spheres?
No, we're talking about circuits. Probably there are invisible circuits, but they're specific lines of travel that you plug into. You know,
because that word circuit is so confusing. It has so many meanings.
It does. You know, several meanings in the book, at least. So
these are just kind of like roadmaps.
Yeah, these are like roadmaps that we travel along, really. And they're provided by the mechanical physical controllers, right? All right.
Roger?
Yeah.
It says that material beings can use this, from 200 to 500 miles an hour.
And those
are lots of beings considered physical?
Yeah, they will actually be physical, and so are the material sons and daughters. But their transport, let me go back here, their transport will be physical mechanisms. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably some type of vehicle, Rodney, that they move in. You know, like a car. You know, but it will be transported probably through the air.
And early Marantia beings like us.
Right, yeah.
They use the same transport vehicle.
That's right. That's right.
I like to look at things when I travel. I couldn't see anything at 100 miles an hour, much less 500.
Well, jets fly typically about, I think, 300 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But there's nothing in the sky to look at. But when you're traveling over land, and when you can look down and see it, you can't see much going that fast.
Yeah. Well, of course, you'll have a lot better vision, too, so that might help also. All right. Let's keep going. Billy, I think you're up next.
Okay. Jerusalem and its associated worlds are endowed with the 10 standard divisions of physical life characteristic of the architectural spheres of Nebadon. And since there is no organic evolution on Jerusalem, there are no conflicting forms of life, no struggle for existence, no survival of the fittest. Rather, there is a creative adaptation which foreshadows the beauty, the harmony, and the perfection of the eternal worlds of the central and divine universe. And in all this creative perfection, there is the most amazing intermingling of physical and of Marantia life, artistically contrasted by the celestial artisans and their fellows.
Okay, so we have 10 divisions of physical life. So this is the standard for all planets in our local universe. This includes the system and the local universe and the constellation. So each of these planets have all 10 types of beings on the planet, okay, from physical beings like humans all the way up to spirit personalities, okay, and everything in between. Okay.
That should be fun.
Yeah, it should be interesting, for sure.
You mean where it says the 10 standard divisions of physical life?
A physical life, that's right. That's right.
Which are, I can't remember.
Well, I couldn't list them off to you either.
A few of them are...
Some of them will be animal, right? The lower forms of animal. Some will be probably more like humans, you know, that they don't tell us about. And of course, there'll be the Maranja type of beings. And then the celestial artisans come from all types of beings, right? So
physical as well.
Yeah, some of them will be physical as well, be given bodies, I guess. Okay? But it makes mention of the beauty and the harmony of all the creatures. There's no survival of the fittest. In other words, there aren't any animals eating each other, right? So all the animals on this planet would be what? Vegetarians. Because they won't be hunting each other and eating carnivorous animals, right? So it will be like our concept of what we've seen of heaven. Animals walking around, laying together, and all in harmony with each other, right? It's a beautiful picture. Yeah. It's what you want to tell your children about, right? Rodney, would you take the next one?
All right. Jerusalem is indeed a foretaste of paradisical glory and grandeur. You can never hope to gain an adequate idea of these glorious architectural worlds by any attempted description. There is so little that can be compared with thought on your world. And even then, the things of Jerusalem so transcend the things of your answer that the comparison is almost grotesque. Until you actually arrive on Jerusalem, you can hardly entertain anything like a true concept of the heavenly worlds. But that is not so long a time in the future when your coming experience on the system capital is compared with your sometime arrival on the more remote training spheres of the universe, the super universe, and of Havana.
So basically say our concepts would be gross considered... considered what it really is, you know. So there is a separation of language here, which does not allow them to really describe it to us, right?
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
What does that word paradisical mean?
It means close to paradise, basically. In other words, it's a simulation of what it will be eventually in paradise. And that's what they really want to do here, Tim, is give us a taste of what it's going to be like once we get to paradise. And
it's beautiful. And,
yeah, it really is.
Thank you, Roger.
Sure. The manufacturing or laboratory sector of Jerusalem is an extensive domain, one of which Urantian could hardly recognize since it has no smoking chimneys. Nevertheless, there is an intricate material economy associated with these special worlds, and there is a perfection of mechanical technique and physical achievement which would astonish and even awe your most experienced chemists and inventors. Pause to consider that the first world of detention and the paradise journey is far more material than spiritual. That'd be mansion world number one, right? Throughout your stay on Jerusalem and its transition worlds, you are far nearer your earth life of material things than your later life of advanced spirit existence. So, think about this. There are laboratories and manufacturing facilities that manufacture every sort of material, semi-material, and Maranja material things that you want and need to live on a planet, right? So when you go to your home, it will have chairs and tables and pictures and anything physical that you can imagine. There is a material or Maranja counterpart that's manufactured in these manufacturing or laboratory section on Jerusalem. Okay? And what they're telling us here is they manufacture these things in such a way that would amaze us, because it's probably all self-contained. It's mechanical. You don't have workers actually making the stuff. It is made on its own, you know?
Hey, Roger, I had a question on Section 1, Physical Aspects of Jerusalem, where it says the seven transitional study works. Is that the Mansion Worlds?
That's the Mansion Worlds, yeah.
Okay, wonderful, because they have so many names, like Seven Satellites, Mansion Worlds, and now this one.
Yeah. So it gets a little confusing when they switch those.
There are seven detention spheres, too, correct?
Yeah, seven detention spheres. It's interesting that they call them that, isn't it, Tim?
Because a form of purgatory for purgatory.
Yeah, it is.
They de-animalize us.
I'm surprised that the numeral system is based on the decimal, the 10.
Instead of the 7.
Everything up there is based on 7.
Well, there's three groups of numbers in all the universe, Billy. There's the 3, the 7, the 10, and the 12. And everything in the universe is multiples of those 4. Everything, you know? So it is kind of interesting how that works. I can't wait to get there. So anything material that we can imagine, they have on the Mansion Worlds. Tim, would you take the next one, please?
Mount Seraph.
Uh-huh.
Is it Seraphim?
It's Mount Seraph.
Mount Seraph is the highest elevation on Jerusalem, almost 15,000 feet, and is the point of departure for all transport Seraphim. Numerous mechanical developments are used in providing initial energy for escaping the planetary gravity and overcoming the air resistance. A seraphic transport departs every 3 seconds of Urantia time throughout the light period and sometimes far into the recession. The transporters take off at about 25 standard miles per second of Urantia time and do not attain standard velocity until they are over 2,000 miles away from Jerusalem.
Okay. Several things in this paragraph are really interesting. First, Mount Seraph. Now, the question is, are the Seraphim named after Mount Seraph? Or is Mount Seraph named in honor of the Seraphim? You think about that? It's an interesting question.
And I just had a question, Roger. You know how they say the word Satania?
Satania?
You don't think that planet is named after Satan, do you?
No, it's probably just the opposite, that Satan was named after the planet. Yeah.
So Satania was named after Satan?
No, the other way around. Satan was probably named after Satania. Yeah.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But I find it interesting that Mount Seraph is the highest elevation on Jerusalem, and that's where all the transport Seraphim leave from. You know? So they either named the mountain in honor of the Seraphim, or the Seraphim were named in honor of the mountain. One of the two. Okay. And it also says here, which another thing is interesting, is the numerous mechanical developments are used in providing initial energy for escaping the planetary gravity and overcoming the air resistance. So there's some kind of mechanical mechanism that must shoot the Seraphim off into the space, right? And then we read about that a couple papers back, how Seraphim take off. Now, this is what I wanted to show you, okay? This is Mount Seraph, what we just talked about, okay? It is the highest elevation on Jerusalem, okay? And they talk about they take off every 3 seconds, and for each Seraphim that takes off, it takes 10 mechanical controllers and 1,000 energy transmitters just to get this Seraphim off the ground. Isn't that interesting?
Well, at 15 miles per second, that's 1,500 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. That's shooting them out of the cannon.
And that's shooting them out of the cannon. That's right. Okay, let's keep going here. Gosh, you read.
I just read, Roger.
Millie, would you take this one, please?
Transports arrive on the crystal field, the so-called Sea of Glass. Around this area are the receiving stations for the various orders of beings who travel, who traverse space by seraphic transport. Near the polar crystal receiving station for student visitors, you may ascend the Purley Observatory and view the immense relief map of the entire headquarters planet.
Okay, and this is a picture of that. Okay, so we have Mount Seraph over here, right, and the Purley Observatory, and this is why where the transport seraphim take off, right? And then you have the Sea of Glass, right? This is 100 miles across, right? And it's got receiving stations for space traversers. So there's places when they come out of the seraphim, they have a receiving station for these places to go. It also says here, transports arrive on the crystal field, the so-called Sea of Glass. Around this area are the receiving stations for the various orders of beings who traverse space by seraphic transport. Near the polar crystal receiving station for student visitors, you may ascend the Purley Observatory. So you can ascend the observatory and watch the seraphim come and go, right? This is also the same Sea of Glass where the entire population of the planet can come and listen and watch the broadcasts from all over the universe, including Universa.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
It mentions a polar crystal. What exactly is a polar crystal? Is it like a quartz crystal?
It's like some kind of immense crystal, huge crystal, 100 miles across, I think it's 30 miles deep.
Look, Roger, actually it's 32 miles in diameter. It's 100 miles circumference. And it's 30 miles deep.
It's 30 miles deep. Thanks, Rodney, for correcting me on that. I don't want to get that wrong. So it's 100 miles circumference then, right, Rodney?
Right.
Right, okay.
How many miles on page 40?
30 miles across, right?
Yeah, 32 miles.
32 miles, that's pretty big.
So the polar crystal is another way of just saying Sea of Glass.
The Sea of Glass, that's right. Yeah. They that's why they call it the so-called Sea of Glass.
I wanted to point out as well, 14,000 feet is pretty darn high.
That's pretty darn high, that is. That's the highest point, let me go back here. That's the highest point on the planet, right?
I mean, it doesn't say how big it is, if it comes to a point or...
No, it just says the Purley Observatory is on top of it for you to watch the coming and going of the transport.
Well, I bet that's cool.
Yeah, I bet it is too. And I guess after you get to Jerusalem, you don't have any fear of heights anymore, so... So I guess there's no vertigo on Jerusalem. Okay.
Interesting.
Let's keep going. I think you're up, Rodney.
Well, I think it's Millie, isn't it?
Oh, is it Millie? Did Millie just read?
I just read.
Yeah, I think she did. You're up. The Jerusalem broadcast.
Okay, the Jerusalem broadcast. The Super Universe and Paradise Vada broadcasts are received on Jerusalem in liaison with Sabaton and by a technique involving the polar crystal, the Sea of Glass, in addition to provisions for the reception of these extra metadon communications. There are three distinct groups of receiving stations. These separate but tricircular groups of stations are adjusted to the reception of broadcasts from the local world, from the constellation headquarters, and from the capital of the local universe. All these broadcasts are automatically displayed so as to be discernible by all types of beings present in the Central Broadcast Amphitheater. Of all preoccupations for an ascendant mortal, altruism, none is more engaging and engrossing than that of listening in on the never-ending stream of universe space reports.
So these space reports come in from the constellation, they come in from Uversa, they come in from all the local planets of what's going on those planets. And so ascending mortals can go and listen at the broadcast from the planets they just came from.
So it's like CNN News, Fox News?
Like a CNN News broadcast. Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of like a radio, like a speaker, or is it like a screen? Or?
Well, they say, we're going to say, see here in a minute, the mechanical physical controllers can make these things visible for us. And
like holographic.
Huh?
So like holographic images?
Yeah, like holographic images.
Wow, right. Could you imagine?
Yeah. So that's pretty, that's pretty neat. Okay. Well, let's keep going here. The Jerusalem Broadcast Receiving Station is circled by an enormous amphitheater constructed of scintillating materials largely unknown on Urantia and seating over 5 billion beings.
Oh, could you imagine?
Material and Baracha, besides accommodating innumerable spirit personalities. I guess they don't take up much space. It is the favorite diversion of all Jerusalem to spend their leisure at the broadcast station. I guess like television. There to learn of the welfare and state of the universe. And this is the only planetary activity which is not slowed down during the recession of light. So you can go and watch these all night long and all day long. Right?
Hey, Roger, do you know what that word scintillating means?
It's like titillating. In other words, they're constructed of things that makes us... what's the word I'm looking for? Makes us want to see it, okay? Basically. Things, materials that we definitely want to go see. You know, it's kind of like your bucket list. I want to see this before I die. That's what they're talking about. Constructed of things.
It teases your senses.
Teases that perfect description, Will.
Thank you, Roger.
Teases your senses. All right. Tim, would you take the next one?
At this broadcast receiving amphitheater, the Salvation messages are coming and continuously nearby the Adventure World word of the Most High Constellation Fathers is received at least once a day. Periodically, the regular and special broadcasts of Uversa are relayed through Salvington, and when the Paradise messengers are in reception, the entire population is assembled around the Sea of Glass. And the Uversa friends add the reflectivity phenomenon to the technique of the Paradise broadcast, so that everything heard becomes visible. And it is in this manner that continual foretaste of advancing beauty and grandeur are afforded the mortal survivors as they journey inward on the eternal adventure.
So the whole reflectivity circuit's involved in this, to bring these Paradise broadcasts to to Jerusalem, so that we as mortals or Marantia beings can see what is to come on Paradise. So you get a glimpse of Paradise through reflectivity and through the broadcasts. Isn't that great? So you actually get to see where you're going for, right? Paradise. So, gives you
and
a
what does
space.
That word reflectivity mean, Roger? See all, feel all?
Yeah, you see all, feel all, hear all. In other words, it's as if you're really there. You know, I kind of, the only thing I could even compare it to would be like a holodeck in Star Trek. You know, did y'all ever watch Star Trek and see a holodeck?
Yeah, I think of that too.
Yeah, where you go in and everything seems real. You can see it, feel it, you touch it and everything. So it seems like you're really there. That's my idea of what reflectivity really is.
Maybe it's like a vision where you're just transported there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and if you think about it, when John the Revelator saw the system capital, when he saw Jerusalem, you know, in the 24, this is probably the type of thing, it was so real to him, he felt like he'd been transported there, right? So, and that's in the book.
And it makes you wonder why they do that. Is it sort of like a carrot, you know?
Yeah, it probably is a taste of what's to come. For someone to tell everyone else, you know, this is why you're here. The struggles of life are the minute things. What we're really going for is the future life, right? This is just the way to get to the future life.
Hey, Roger, speaking of life, what do you tell people when they ask you what's the meaning of life, according to the Urantia Papers?
My answer for that is the meaning of life is the search and the finding of the Father. That's what the meaning of life is. That's really the true meaning of life.
So it's the searching for God, correct?
Yes, that's it.
It doesn't really matter if it's Allah, Buddha, or Yahweh, or Jehovah?
Doesn't matter what you call him, he's still the universal Father. Yeah. You call him anything you want to, but the concept of he's the Father of all universes. And that is the meaning of life. That's what life's about. Our paradisal track to find the Father. And part of that is what? The brotherhood of man. In order to find the Father, we have to experience the family, right? And the family of God is the brotherhood of man. So, in order to find the Father, we have to work on living with one another, loving one another, and becoming part of the cosmic family. And that's the part of the meaning of life.
Yeah, one Muslim woman replied when she was asked what the meaning of life was to worship Allah.
Yeah, and she's right. She's right. That is the meaning of life. It's your pathway to God.
Okay, thank you, Roger.
I don't think we read this one, did we? No, okay. Who's up? I think you're up, Tim.
The Jerusalem sending stations is located at the opposite pole of the sphere.
Did we read at this broadcast recently? Yeah, we did. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
I'll start over. The Jerusalem sending station is located at the opposite pole of the sphere. All broadcasts to the individual worlds are relayed from the system capitals except the Michael messages, which sometimes go direct to their destinations over the Archangel circuit.
So it comes in to the top of the pole, right, which is the crystal field, right? And they are relayed out from the bottom pole, right? And except for the Michael messages, sometimes the Michael messages go directly over the Archangel circuit. Why is that important to us?
Because we have a station here on Earth.
We have an Archangel station here
that's
on Earth.
That's interesting, huh?
And that's how that this planet, Jerusalem, keeps in touch with Urantia right now is through that Archangel circuit.
Which is actually probably a much better circuit.
Probably is. And the messages from Michael come directly through that circuit also, right?
Now, when they say pole, are they talking about polar crystal, Roger?
Yeah, yeah, on each end, right.
It makes you wonder if all the physical spheres are similar. We receive on the North Pole and go out on the South Pole.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it, Rodney?
Yeah, because, I mean, everything seems to be patterned, you know?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be funny if someone dug down deep enough on either pole and found this huge crystal there?
I'm curious about that.
Yeah. You know, it's a good question. You know?
So again, Roger, the word pole just can also translate as sea of glass.
Yeah, yeah, sea of glass. That's right. The other thing I wanted to mention about this, too, is Michael's message is going over the archangel circuit. Who's the most trusted angels in our local universe? The archangels. That's right. And that's probably why that circuit is used. You know, it can never be changed or anything through that circuit, right? It goes just as exactly as it's supposed to. Okay. It's 10 till 9, y'all. Or just maybe a quarter till 9. I think I'm going to rather break that. This is a huge section. And rather than break it up so that it confuses everybody, I think I'm going to stop here so that we can take this up from this point on our next meeting, if that's okay with everyone. Because I don't want to slight it in any way. Is that okay with everybody?
That's fine, Roger.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, well, let's say a little prayer, and then I'll stop the videos for tonight, and we'll talk for a second. Millie, would you like to pray for us tonight, dear?
Heavenly Father, thank you for giving us this time again to read this revelation that you've given us. Thank you for keeping us on track. Thank you for putting Roger's computer back together.
Yes.
Help us to take this information in, sort it out, and understand it. I'm having great difficulty with it, but I thank you that it's here for me. Until next time, we ask these things in the name of Jesus of Nebadon. Amen.
Amen. And thank you for joining us at home. Sorry for the slight interruption. Hopefully we won't have that happen next time.